You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Fosma Moon, and Seth Miller.
This week's episode is sponsored by 23andMe.com. 23andMe.com is a genetic testing service that provides you with reports about where your DNA comes from. Explore your heritage and learn what percentage of your DNA originates from places like Italy, Finland, East Asia, or Africa. And now through August 3rd, you could win a genetic travel adventure as 23andMe.com will choose one person each day for 23 days to travel to countries based on their DNA. Will you be one of the 23 people to travel for free based on your DNA? Order your DNA kit for a chance to win, to explore your connection to the world, and to travel like never before. To enter, visit 23andMe.com/DLD. That's the number 23andMe.com/DLD. No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older. Ends August 3rd. Must complete the 23andMe service. Visit 23andMe.com/rules for free entry. And now on to the show.
Episode 151, guys. Man, we're over the hump.
It's all downhill from here?
It's all downhill. I guess that's like the assumption like that we're ending at 300 or something. But no, we're not. As far as I know.
Let's make that decision when we get there. How's that?
Well, you know, it sets us up for a comeback tour.
Yeah, I like comeback
tours. Those usually sell better than the originals, don't they?
Yeah. Exactly.
Make an album. We can put out an album, you know.
Merchandising.
May the shorts be with you.
Air Canada had a near miss at San Francisco Airport. They apparently almost landed on the taxiway at SFO. And then went around. They were within 100 feet, I think, of the runway is what they said, before they basically
aborted. It was 100 vertical feet is what I got. Oh, yeah. That's what you said.
Yeah, 100 feet vertically. I didn't say vertically, but yeah, 100 vertical feet.
Yeah, over the other planes. It's listening to the ATC recording is kind of crazy. Although the other thing that was interesting about it, apparently one of the two runways was closed.
Yep.
And so if they thought they were lining up, you know, on the left one, and, you know, there's two sets of lights, so they went for the left set of lights.
Yep.
Even though they would have been different colors, or should have been different colors. But, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, in some ways, this is the way that everything worked just the way it's supposed to, right? That someone noticed it was bad. I have to think that they might have tried to go around if they really were flying into, you know, these airplanes, if they saw the airplanes there because the lights are on, these airplanes also. But someone, one of the other planes, I assume the first one, you know, that was going to get hit. It's like, no, he's coming for us. They said he's lined up on the taxiway.
Yep.
Air traffic control heard it, made it go around. The guy spooled the engines up, did the go around. We will learn from this something, I'm sure, about night approaches and things like that. Maybe, what, should there have been instrumentation that beeped louder or something? I don't know.
Well, that's kind of the question I had was, you know, I thought that originally San Francisco had gotten rid of the visual approach, but I was told no, they still use it pretty heavily, and this was a visual approach from what I can tell. And so I'm surprised with the runway closed that they actually weren't on the ILS just because of, for clarity, right? Using the instrumentation to verify, because there's people on the runway. The other runway, assuming they were making fixes, right, to that other runway. For safety reasons, I would think you would have the ILS up, but it doesn't sound like they were doing ILS approaches at all that night. That's an interesting thing to me. So,
this was on 2/8.
This was on 2/8. Yeah.
They still do a bunch of visuals, particularly if the weather's clear.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did, but I couldn't remember. And then I was like, well, wait, I thought I read something about them getting rid of them because of spacing issues. But that, you know, I was wrong. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what I'm sure they're investigating this. The NTSB and the FAA are probably looking into it.
Canadian authorities also, obviously, because it's a Canadian flag plane. They're the ones that released the altitude thing. It's interesting. The aircraft doesn't have ADS-B.
Interesting. What kind of plane? What kind of plane was it?
It's an A320.
Yeah, that's surprising.
A320 family. It doesn't have ADS-B on it. So when you looked at the data, right, you know, when the news came out, FlightAware and FlightRadar 24 both had data, but it's MLAT. Which I don't know what that stands for, but it's basically three beacons sort of triangulate positioning. It's much more a guess of where it is based on sort of that sort of thing than the airplane broadcasting its position based on the internal GPS data, which is what ADS-B does. So it was, you know, I think one of them said 400 feet, one of them said 1,100 feet. Hmm. But to find out that it's actually 100 feet is kind of spooky.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, MLAT takes responses from multiple transponders and triangulates it. Is basically what MLAT does.
Yeah. So.
Another miss was Delta. They missed their targets and have lowered their future guidance. And Foz, you brought this up just because you like picking on Delta, I think. But that's
well, not necessarily. While I might. But it'll be interesting what the other two airlines do, right? Because Delta's been this golden child for the last couple of years. And they missed by a penny. You know,
penny? Really?
A penny.
For sure.
Yeah. They missed by a penny. Then like 20 million for the quarter. But a penny per share, basically. And they took a beating. But at the same time, the other two stocks actually rose. But they said they're, you know, and this was I think the truly telling part. The thing that would hurt them the most was fuel costs went up, and as did labor costs.
Yeah. And both of those are to be expected. They also took a $125 million hit for that, the April debacle where there were thunderstorms for a couple hours in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. That took 4 days to recover from. It was more than a couple hours, but those thunderstorms cost them 120, and their inability to recover cost them $125 million.
Well, and I haven't had a chance to go read the report, but I would be interested to see if they've started writing off any of the costs from the refinery at this point.
They mentioned it in the call. I actually didn't read the full 10Q yet, but I listened to the conference call, earnings call that they did. They mentioned it. And it was there was pressures from it, but I don't think they said it was material, so or not significant. Probably material, but not significant. I don't know, not major. So it all adds up in the end. You know, their revenue. I think it's interesting. They've been trying to cut back their Asia exposure significantly, and you know the Korean joint venture is going to help limit exposure by cutting back a bunch more routes and or shrinking some of them, going from 747s to 350s and such, but. They're still seeing a lot of pressure on the Asia side of things. Although they said Tokyo is, did they say Tokyo was strong or weak? Their view on Tokyo was surprising to me compared to the others. I think they said it was stabilizing.
But I mean, right now they probably have it's them and United who lead the pack as far as Asia routes, and they have a lot less capacity. And we don't hear the same thing from United.
Into China and Hong Kong, you do.
As a whole, though, right? So they fly to a bunch of different places, and United's not downsizing anything. I mean, if you count the 744 to 77W downsized, then yes. But if you consider it, you know, on par, they haven't really downsized anything.
Yeah. Have they? Yeah, Tokyo's all revenue improvements, according to Delta.
It's that Haneda hub they got.
I think that I'm trying to find it out. Load factor and yield, it's stabilizing a little bit. China's down.
Well, China is just like there's so many carriers dumping seats into it right now, right?
Yeah, everybody's got new 787s. No one's heard of the airline, but they'll fly it because it's cheap.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's gonna be the same answer United has in their.
Well, I think United is actually
next week. This week for the people listening, next week for us talking.
Well, United's got the benefit that they fly to secondary cities. Delta does
you think
not.
That helps them?
I actually think that. Yes, because there's and a lot of those games are the only game in town, and for like particularly for the manufacturing industry, you don't need to go to Beijing or Shanghai as much as you need to go to some of these secondary places where you can do that on a nonstop from San Francisco.
Interesting. I know those routes were like you know have sort of been. I get the feeling that when Kirby starts talking about wanting to change all the plans for the routes and the planning and moving more domestic, I feel like China's what he's talking about. And cutting back some of that growth.
You mean not all the 752 routes into Europe that we keep seeing disappearing?
Those two, probably, huh?
Do you think that he would just like cut this, you know, the second daily Shanghai flight, maybe or something? I feel like Chengdu.
They worked so hard to get that.
Yeah.
Right, and the slots. Right, that's one. That's still one that's slot restricted. So the DOT approved that, and they spent years getting a decent timing. I'd be surprised if they dropped it, because if they just cut it. I can't imagine DOT lets them move it to one of the other cities without Delta and American certainly putting up a fight.
Yeah.
So
can they downgauge it?
Yes, I believe so. Downgauging it may get the other guys to protest, but probably wouldn't see it handed off.
But so Delta protests. What would they want to fly? Where would they want to fly?
Delta wants LA Beijing.
But can they do? But that's not Shanghai.
doesn't matter that the slots from the bilateral treaty are considered main, you know, tier one cities to United China, tier one China cities to United States anywhere.
Okay.
So you'd use the, you'd have to get different landing slots from the airport authority, which is why American hasn't started service yet. That was another one that came out lately. Right. That, so American and Delta were fighting over who was going to get that service. They both applied for the last seven slots, so daily service from LA to Beijing, and American ended up winning it and hasn't started service yet because there's the delay of getting slots and all these things, and much like United's troubles in Shanghai, hasn't been able to get good slots. And Delta just last week, I think, filed another, hey, by the way, those guys haven't done what they're supposed to yet. We want them, so we'll take them. We'll just start now. We're good. And apparently did it, but still, they, you know, my response was with what slots, and people who know things about this stuff are like, oh no, that hasn't been announced yet. So I think Delta's just stirring the pot. But in some ways, that's like competitive smart, right? Given the opportunity, why wouldn't you stir the pot?
Right. So San Francisco Shanghai today is a 744 and a 788. So the 788 will stay. The 744 will change. We know that for sure.
Sure.
My guess would be that they don't actually move a 77W on it, and they just put a 772 on it.
There for a while, it was a 789 and a 7. I think it was like two 789s there for a while. And I guess they've shipped
it. Those come and go in terms of capacity and things. So.
Well, I mean, do you think they would cut something like Xi'an or Chengdu? I mean, Xi'an's already seasonal, right? Chengdu's year round.
Is it seasonal? I know, so they're not daily, right?
Yeah, they're not daily.
I think it really depends on what the business loads are doing right now.
Yeah.
Right, those flights are probably a lot more front cabin economics in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth,
but just to wrap that up, I mean, clearly United's seeing an uptick in Asia because they're putting the 77W on Taipei now.
Yeah. True.
Cargo.
Maybe. I can't imagine it's. I mean, maybe it is, but
right, they kept a 74 on that for a while too, so.
That's come and gone. That's gone to a 772 for a while. It keeps changing.
Part of me feels like it's what do we still got lying around it for dispatch at the end of the night? but
yeah, what's still running today? What doesn't have speed tape on it at the moment?
If it's got speed tape on it, that means they fixed it. Come on.
Maybe not for a 14-hour flight.
All over the Pacific Ocean.
All over the Pacific Ocean. Yeah.
Details.
Seth, you had mentioned some chewing gum idiocy you wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Hit us.
Air France has its own chewing gum now.
Oh, this is what you're talking about. Okay. Yes, I did see this.
Really? Why?
That's a fair question.
What's the point?
Branding.
I guess. I mean, are there that many people in your potential customer base who
want to make flying more enjoyable? La gomme à mâcher, the gum to chew. And it looks like someone's come in those foil packets.
Double mint?
No, that's a different one. Anyway.
Wrigley's, the old Wrigley's packaging? With
that looks like a pack of pills.
Oh.
By Altoids or something like that?
Yeah, whatever. The foil wrapped backs. Wraps the pills. They're going to be launching on flights between Paris and Los Angeles and Paris to San Francisco beginning on July 6th, as also available in the lounges. The gum is made in France and is 100% natural. Once again, Air France is illustrating French savoir-faire throughout the world. My concern, and I hadn't read the press release before mentioning this, and only just now read it to quote and say nasty things, awkward things, maybe not nasty. I was wondering, because we were talking about Asia earlier, if they were going to be able to, if they were going to bring it on flights to Singapore or not.
I was going to ask that question. It's a valid question.
It seems like the answer is no. It's only going to be loaded on the planes for LA and San Francisco, but you can pick it up in the lounge.
Interesting.
So.
I don't get it, but okay.
Me neither. But, you know, you chew gum to clear your ears on planes. Also, it's, like, fun, and, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Because amenity kits were too passe.
Or just, like, just include a stick in the amenity kit itself, if it's that important.
I assume it's only in business class, and now I need to double-check that also.
Let's talk JetBlue. They have a challenge.
And a match.
And a match. It's the Mosaic
Ooh,
Challenge.
Sorry, right? I forgot to mention. It's a pistachio, macaroon, and creme brulee flavors.
That sounds
two
terrible.
Separate things.
That sounds terrible. Awful.
Both flavors. Like,
creme brulee would be good. I think creme brulee would be good.
No. Screw that. Mint gum or nothing.
You can buy it. They're going to start selling it on July 6th also. Which means
can we start having it shipped to Steven on a weekly basis?
What? You guys are going
to
be
There's
like...
also a snap code that you can scan to discover a special lens.
Ooh.
Are we calling filtered lenses now? I don't know anything about Snapchat anymore.
We should ask Cynthia. She was on, you know, we had her on the phone earlier.
Anyway, so JetBlue is again this year, as they have in years past, doing a status match and challenge for Mosaic, their tier. They only have the one elite tier. I like it because I live in New York, and I like flying JetBlue out of New York because they have lots of flights to lots of places, and they have more legroom, and they have free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
And free drinks if you're Mosaic. So really nothing not to like about that. It's instead of $5,000 base fare spend, they did the EQD, PQD thing, whatever. They were one of the first. Instead of $5,000 over the course of a year, it's $1,250 in a 90-day window. So quarter of the time, quarter of the money. Knock yourself out. Have fun. I've qualified 3 times using the challenge. I intend to qualify for a 4th. So always a good excuse to upgrade one of my trips to Mint in business class so I can get the spend right, which I know is not a good justification for spending a few hundred extra dollars. But the way I look at it, most of it's trips I'm taking anyways, and the amount I save in change fee waivers is pretty significant. So that to me is the huge value of it, right? It's sort of like Southwest does it for everybody. Your money goes into a travel bank. Southwest does it for everybody. Alaska does it for its MVP Gold and Gold 75, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And JetBlue does it for Mosaic. So you get change fees waived. And it makes award trips refundable, I think, even though because they waive them and your points just go back into your points bank instead of a cash bank that they hold for you. I like it. I like it a lot. And so I'm going for the challenge. There's the game of, like, when do you register and what's your 90-day window? Because it's only open for – the registration is open for 30 days. And then you have to register by August 14th, I think. And then fly 90 days from the day you start from your registration date. So I recommend – if you can, register a day or two in advance just to make sure it goes through. I'm pretty sure they process it manually. So, make sure you do it on a weekday just in case. But from there, it's pretty good.
Nice.
If you don't live in New York or Boston, or maybe Fort Lauderdale or Orlando, it's probably not a good deal.
Yeah. Somewhere that JetBlue flies.
Yeah, one of their hubs. Like you gotta be somewhere that you can fly JetBlue a lot. Ed, we talked about him a lot, apparently. We've talked about him in now 3 consecutive episodes. He's starting to get a little concerned. Was asking if he should do it. And I was like, no, because you live in D.C. and they don't fly anywhere for you.
Yeah. I guess if you live in Long Beach.
And fly transcons.
Well, I mean, they fly
Long Beach. Or up and down the coast, yeah. Yeah.
They fly West Coast stuff out of Long Beach a lot.
A few, sort of.
Yep.
I think you'd have trouble spending $1,200 doing that.
They're probably.
Usually cheaper, but...
But if you're in San Francisco or L.A. and you're on transcon...
I mean, one mint round trip does it.
Yeah.
I was just about to say, you could do that on one mint round trip. It'd be worth it just for that.
Yeah, I'm bummed. We're going out to the West Coast in mid-August for Linnea's book tour. My wife's book is coming out August 1st, and so there's a little tour going on with that, and when I was looking the date we wanted to fly, there was actually 2 seats at like $650 or $670 in Mint, and in part because I didn't know if the challenge was going to exist and if I wasn't going to use it, I was like, maybe not, and then like the next day they were $1,100.
Oof. You've had that happen to you a few times now.
Yeah. Looking at the budget for the trip and everything else, like not spending the extra money was probably the right choice. But what it could have done is like redeemed points for her and cash for me and gotten the status and then, had it all done. So it was, such is life.
Yep. Etihad and Qatar Airways are set to drop their code shares with American Airlines. This is in the world of... Or they've already dropped, right?
It's 2018.
I would say they're going to be dropped. I think... The way you phrased it, it sounded like maybe they made that choice, and I don't believe that's true.
Yeah.
Well, they made the choice. It's just not going to affect into 2018.
But American made the choice.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Which is ironic, as Qatar is moving forward to make a 10% investment into American.
4.75 until the board approves it.
What's the point of this? Like, why is American getting defensive? I mean, does it cost them money, you think, to have the co-chairs? More money than they're willing to spend?
I think the commentary I've seen is it was a move to appease their flight crews, their staff.
That sounds like BS.
Nah, it doesn't surprise me. It also helps solve the hypocrisy of them bitching about that the airlines flying to the United States and stealing their jobs while also, you know, operating in conjunction with them and supporting those operations with code shares.
Yeah.
Well, but they're not dropping the interline agreements.
No, they can't drop the interline with Qatar Airways.
Exactly.
Because of Oneworld. They could drop it with Etihad if they wanted to, but, you know, that's one of those, like, they're both full IATA members. Most IATA members interline with most others. There's occasional quirks about, like, we won't do it on separate itineraries, or you can write fare rules that won't let you sell end-on-end, even with other airlines on the same ticket. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and maybe we'll see some of that stuff come about as well. But right now, I think that's only with Etihad. I think the One World relationship really ties Americans' hands when it comes to how Qatar Airways gets treated.
And, I mean, it's ironic. One of the AA people that I follow on Twitter and Instagram just, you know, got really riled up after Akbar's comments about grandmothers and serving you on planes.
Hey, he said he was sorry, and I'm sure he meant it.
Well, the truth does hurt.
I half the grandmas and grandpas provide pretty good service, half don't.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Same with the 20-year-olds. It's my problem with that whole thing is it becomes, A, he's... Well, whatever. It becomes this sort of ageist kind of, like, I only like looking at this type of person games.
Yeah, the comment was definitely out of line, but, I mean, the reality is, like, you know, we've all heard about the notorious United Seattle crews, you know, on the job for 40 years, and they weren't going to retire just because, for whatever reason, but the service they offered was awful, and they didn't care. But then there's, I've had some service, which, you know, they're clearly very senior, and they do a great job. So it's less an issue of the age. I think it's more of an issue of the unions have just forced a problem where there's just no quality control anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've had one of our friends, Brian's been on the show once or twice also, who's talking about, like, even just the little things like the 1K free food benefit.
Yeah.
Pizza and burger aren't included. Yes, they are. No, they're not. Okay. He's got the right attitude. Like, you don't, right? You never get in a fight with a flight attendant, especially while you're in the air, because that never ends well for the passenger. So he says fine, and then disputes the charge in America or requests a refund, and United Airlines refunds it. But, like, A, it's a pain in the ass, and B, how many people don't know that they're actually entitled to it and pay for it anyways? And C, why the hell can't you get the flight attendants to pay attention to what the rules are, or, you know, what the policies are, and actually follow them?
Yeah.
I mean, my thought is they should just put in the seat number, and the reader should automatically say no charge.
Yeah.
That would be the smart way of doing it. So if the reader comes back and says no charge, it's no charge. And that also gives, I mean, United the ability to, like, in their ops and stuff to change that. You know, so if someone, your flight's severely delayed, they could say, you know, give them a drink or whatever as well.
Yeah. That's something SAS does that. Not on board, but when your flight, because they, you know, have more and more information about people. If you have the app, like, if your flight's delayed, depending on your status level and other things, like, no elite status, you know, Joe Schmo gets a link for download a free magazine. Someone who's silver but close to gold and, you know, is considered a high-value customer and is getting there gets a free lounge invite because they know that, you know, this is like the, hey, you know, you're almost there. You're going to get this next month anyways. Get a teaser now and try to make sure that that person flies, you know, next month also to get it. And if you're already gold, you get, like, something else. But there's a lot of cool things that can be done with the data if you're willing to invest in some of the infrastructure.
Yep.
You know, and it actually sort of segues into one of the other topics that we were going to talk about. I don't know if we finished this one, but I also don't remember what this one was. So, Akbar. Yeah, we're done with that.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, 23andMe.com. People are starting to look within, accessing their DNA data to understand who they are, where they are from, and how they are connected to something greater than themselves. The DNA journey of identity, connection, and belonging has only just begun. And now through August 3rd, you could win a genetic travel adventure as 23andMe.com will choose one person each day for 23 days to travel to countries based on their DNA. Will you be one of the 23 people to travel for free based on your DNA? Order your DNA kit for a chance to win, to explore your connection to the world, and to travel like never before. To enter, visit 23andMe.com/DLD. That's the number 23 ANDME.com/DLD. No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 or older. Ends August 3rd. Must complete 23andMe service. Visit 23andMe.com/rules for free entry. And now, back to the show.
United in technology, they've got this new, like, pre-bumping software, essentially. Mm. Right, revenue management, half black magic, half art, half science. It's a really crazy, we work with these massive amounts of data and hope that we get it right, but then the week of travel comes around and it's, oh shit, we already sold out this one flight and we typically sell 5 seats on it in the last week. And those last seats we sell are, you know, Y fares and B fares and F fares. What do you do? Right. And historically the answer is usually you oversell and hope for no shows, but the revenue management, inventory management algorithms have sort of already taken that into account. So then what do you do?
It's
an interesting thing. So the new software, and I'm blanking on the name of the company. I'll look it up while we're talking here. But there's a couple of them. And I know one of the competitors of this guy. I know the competitors of who United chose. But what they basically do is they look at the bookings. They look at what's going on out there and preemptively say, okay, well, this person bought a cheap ticket 6 months in advance. Maybe they're flexible and the 2 o'clock flight has space, but he's booked on the 4 o'clock flight that's sold out and 4 o'clock is more, you know, appealing to business travelers. Let me email them and see if I can give them a $200 voucher and they'll take the earlier flight or a later flight. The whole thing gets negotiated before you get to the airport, which for many people when thinking about bumps is attractive. Like once I'm at the airport and checked in and like sitting there, do I really want to know, like, you sort of get in that mental state of, like, okay, it's time to travel, and then it's like, ah, crap, now I got to sit here for another 2 hours. Some people love it. I usually take the bump anyways, but not everybody does. And so that's one of the things on it. The other thing is they can put you on an earlier flight, which obviously you can't really do if you're standing at the gate and the plane has already left. So there's a few interesting things like that that come from it. Depending on the company involved, some of them offer, you know, just, you know, this travel voucher, right? Your typical bump voucher. Others can do things like, hey, instead of getting you home, you know, at noon, you're going to get home at 8 p.m., but we'll give you a free Uber ride. We'll give you a voucher for the ride home from the airport because it's so much later. Hmm. Things like that. Or we can, you know, and they can integrate it with, there's other third-party sort of vendors that do food credits, whether it's the temporary voucher that United gives out or whatever, or a company like Grab, which is one of the, like, you order from your phone. The time you get, you know, you order when they open the door on the plane. As you're walking to your next gate, you can sort of grab and go, but it's real food as opposed to grab and go pre-made sandwiches.
Yeah.
It's some interesting things. Volantio, V-O-L-A-N-T-I-O, Yield Boost is the name of the application. So obviously focusing on getting more for the airline's yields. Avicel, A-V-I-S-E-L-L, is another one. I know the guy who's doing it. It's pretty cool stuff. I think this is one of those things that, like, technology is really cool, but someone has to build it and someone has to convince an airline to take it, you know, to try this sort of thing and then see if it actually works.
Yeah. Well, so we'll have to see how United implements it and how well it goes. I'll be interested to see it.
All right, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'll be interested to see it and how much it relieves on hub-to-hub type routes and places where it's really busy, like on busy weekends. Like, does it relieve some of the backlog of people who are on standby and things like that?
Yeah. I think you can also do you can do things like reroute around a hub to a nonstop that ended up not selling out.
Yeah.
Right. I booked the cheaper flight because it was connecting. But it turns out you need my seat on that hub-to-hub segment or whatever, on one of the two segments, but not the other one. You can reroute me on the nonstop. Maybe you offer me the nonstop and don't even have to pay me.
Yeah.
Right? And the airline still gets what they wanted because, you know, or gets close to what they wanted because they still never really sold that seat cheap. I don't know. I think there's some interesting ways to play this.
I mean, it'll be interesting because most of these oversell situations happen because of air ops. You can't really plan for air ops.
Yeah.
So I mean, it'll definitely help in, like, you know, the Delta debacle.
VDBs don't come from air ops though, right? Those are you bump people, you know. Flight gets canceled, everybody's standby. They don't force confirm to oversell usually.
It's happening more and more now. And the other problem is with the inventory discrepancy at United, happens more when you rebook yourself, because the website's getting its data differently than the agents.
Oops.
Yeah.
So all right, well, you know.
That could be a problem, just fixing where your data's tied up.
Yeah. Hmm. Right, details, well, detail.
That's a choice someone can make. anyways.
Last topic is a sad topic. A woman was killed at St. Martin's Maho Beach, riding the fence, I guess we would call it, during a jet takeoff. And Seth, yes. You were interviewed for this, I'm sure. You've talked enough about
Yeah, and I've no, I mean, I've written about it a little bit. You know, I was there a month ago. I was at a Caribbean aviation conference down there, and speaking, you know, to the industry and talking about all sorts of things within the region. But the appeal of, you know, Maho Beach and the planes landing over your head is huge for that island. That it's a big part of their tourism draw. It's not the only thing people do, but cruise ships come in and you can see the beach fill up. Actually, we had a cruise ship day while I was there, and we were sitting at the restaurant, the Sunset Grill, having lunch. And I knew that, you know, I wanted to have a seat on the water, sort of on the railing. So we got there early because, you know, I don't mind drinking an extra beer while waiting for the planes to show up. And just while we were sitting there, you saw bus after bus pull in. And all of a sudden, the beach went from, like, this nice, quiet whatever to crazy crowded. And then, you know, a couple hours later, you see a cruise ship pull out, and, you know, at sunset, just after sunset kind of thing. So... it is, and one of the tourism executives said it's one of the most popular things they do. It's one of the most popular tourism events for cruise ships and for other people who come in. I've now been several times, even when I've just been, you know, down with my wife in St. Martin. We were connecting through, going over to Saba, but like we took our lunch sitting at the cafe watching the planes land.
Yep.
We had, you know, I booked it as a 4-hour layover. We dropped our bags off at the airport for the onward connection and walked. It's a 15-minute walk from the front door of the terminal to be standing on the beach.
Yeah.
No sidewalk for part of it, but that's just part of the adventure. But yeah, it's, and right, this is one of those things. I've been on the beach this time, actually, this most recent trip. I thought I was sufficiently laterally separated on the beach and ended up, you know, to take some video of people surfing the fence,
mm-hmm.
and ended up getting so sandblasted that I like ducked down and fell into the sand, and still was like 2 days later, I feel like picking sand out of my hair that I couldn't wash out. Cause I had gotten so much blown into me. But the day I did it, like there's a barrier right along the side of the road to keep to keep the cars from falling off the side of the asphalt into the fence. So it's one of those metal barricades that you see like on a divider, you know, all over the world.
Yep.
And it's beat to shit because cars keep hitting it and bumping it and whatever. And people keep climbing on it. And so it's one thing to sort of like stand on the ground. The day I was there, in this video I have of like when I fell, you know, sort of took cover in the sand, people are standing on top of this thing, which is angled and slippery metal, in flip-flops, while holding on to a not especially rugged fence. I mean, it's, you know, standard 8-foot chain link fence, but, you know, it's been, again, leaned on and beat on and hung on and whatever for so much time, it's, you know, not super stable. So it's going to wobble and shake in the wind. And you're a couple hundred feet from the business end of a 737 or 340 or 787, whatever engine it happens to be. In this, the case of this incident, it was a 737. The exhaust is hot because it's coming out of a jet engine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming at you at that distance and whatnot between 50 and 100 miles an hour. And you put all this together, and it's a 2-lane road. It's narrow, so, you know, maybe 20 feet across, 30 feet tops. And it's got a central concrete divider as the lane marker, and then a second concrete wall to hold the sand in. And those are also, because they've been hit by cars and all this stuff, they're jagged and rough, and, you know, also, even if they were perfectly smooth, falling onto concrete hurts. Falling onto concrete, getting blown at by wind that's moving 50 to 100 miles an hour, probably hurts more. So, we have friends who have done it. I've been there and seen people do it. I have no desire to actually hang on the fence during a departure.
Yeah.
No, not for me.
My version of stupid is different than that.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's also a known risk. Like.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I was going to say, that metal barricade that people stand on. I have a picture of this girl, this young woman standing with her heels over the danger, jet blast, don't stand here sign.
Yeah.
Yep. Right? Like, you know, I think the interesting thing about this one, people are like, are they going to close it? And there's two interesting responses to that. One is the people saying, I hope they don't, because someone died, because I want to go do that. Which, again, my version of stupid is different, but I think that this is a particularly special type of, I hope they don't close this super dangerous thing, because I want to go do something super dangerous.
Yeah.
It's an interesting line of thought. The other aspect of it is apparently the local authorities spoke with the friends and or family who were there with her, and the details on that are, you know, sort of day after the event or night of the event, so it's a little vague. But apparently in the conversation, they were like, yeah, we saw the signs. We shouldn't have been there. We understand that. You know, terrible tragedy, but I don't know if maybe it's just because it's not the United States that people understand you don't just get to go like crazy and sue everybody else for doing things like this.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will close. I think there's a lot of reasons it won't, both financially and for the tourism aspect of it, and operationally, putting in a blast fence there I think would be challenging and create potential problems. I mean, building the fence much higher could be challenging, and a blast fence would have to be higher than the existing chain link.
Yeah.
They moved the front end of the runway threshold because the fence got clipped a couple times.
Hmm.
I don't remember how long ago that was, but, you know, recent enough.
Do they need as much runway now that there's no 7.4s going in there?
340s are still relatively need a decent amount of runway, although it's landing. That's the other thing I'm not sure of is, like, right, I don't think they need it for, do you need max runway length just to land, or is it also departure? Could you put a different threshold marker for landing versus departures? I should probably reach out to the guys I know who work down there now and see some of their thoughts, but it's an interesting challenge. I think there's a whole lot of reasons that they won't close it. Also, they can't close the road. The road is necessary to provide connectivity to the people who live on the other side. So you can't close the road, and then if you like, you either, and you can't, I mean, closing the beach is kind of silly because the road's open. And so at that point, do you station a bunch of people, you know, to like yell at the tourists, no, don't hang on the fence. Well, I got yelled at once two trips ago.
Well, they could just like put a wall there instead of the fence in front of, you know,
I don't think that would work. I think you run into the problem of if it looks like a blast wall, then it has to be engineered to handle that wind.
Right.
Right. The reason a chain link fence works is because, you know, 99% goes through.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Beats up on tourists.
I mean, they could do something like put louvers or something to deflect it so you don't feel it, so there's no desire to see it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised they don't have jet blast deflectors there.
Well, I don't,
so someone asked me about, yeah, part of it's a space thing, and they'd have to be tall. So I was looking, someone sent me a link to one of the products, like a company that makes these things, and I was looking, and I think the minimum size that can handle wide bodies is 14 feet tall.
Yeah.
And it would need to be properly secured, and like at that end of the runway, it's
tight
grass, and it's a beach. So I don't know how far down you have to dig to get to limestone or something that can, you know, really secure it, or do you make a huge concrete sort of base or what? But it's, so there's a lot of problems. I mean, obviously, if they had to do it, they could do it, right? I mean, anything can be engineered, but I think it's a little more complicated than let's just put some stuff up here and no one will want to stand here anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's a sad situation, and
yeah,
just be careful if you're going to Maho Beach or anywhere where you can watch planes up close. You know,
seriously, even just standing on the sand there, getting like it's literally you get sandblasted.
Yeah,
I don't understand what's comfortable about that. Yeah. I distinctly did not enjoy it.
It's like Steven going to Singapore for a caning. It's you get your spa treatment by being sandblasted.
Well, folks, I think that's a wrap.
Yep, you can follow Dots, Lines, and Destinations on Twitter at Dots Lines. Or online at moredotsmorelines.com. You can leave us a comment there. You can visit the Patreon page and subscribe or give us...
Coming soon, bonus content for Patreon subscribers.
Hopefully.
Maybe, probably.
Hopefully, yeah.
We've got a little already.
Yep. So thanks for listening, and until next time, happy travels.
Take care.
Take care. Happy caning?
Happy... Oh, God. just stop the recording now.
We're done.
Yeah.